everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life. Because what it takes to write the book you want to write, that's also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. It's all creative, baby. It's true. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org, and we are funded by the good people at the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. You can learn more about the PNWA at pnwa.org. And interesting conversation. Unique person, Cassandra Cause, an award-winning game writer and former scriptwriter at Ubisoft Montreal. Cause work can be found in places like the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction, Lightspeed, and Tor.com. Cause first novel, or novella, Hammers on Bone, was a British Fantasy Award and Lucas Award finalist, and their novel, or novella, Nothing But Blackened Teeth, was a USA Today bestseller, Bram Stoker Award nominee, and Indie Next pick. The Salt Grows Heavy is their latest novel, and what an interesting person. We talked about, well, all kinds of stuff, you know, unusual background, their eidetic memory. Anyway, it was a fun conversation, and, well, I look forward to sharing with you now. Enjoy. All right. Well, listen, I'm talking to Cassandra Caw, whose book, as this is going live, is out for everyone to read. Cassandra, how are you doing? How are you feeling?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Now, we're recording this beforehand, but so we're in that week leading up to this. Is your second novel you've published? You had a novella you published, is that right?
Before? Oh, no. This is actually my eighth
book. What? Oh, God. All right. Well, the publicity information sent to me was lacking.
It is my second book with Tor Nightfire.
Before this,
there were projects published with Tor.com. And but on books, which I think has gotten rolled into Solaris, I'm not entirely sure, but yeah, under the Rebellion umbrella and Era One Books.
Okay, all right. My apologies.
All over the place.
Okay, well, I am sorry about that, but this is second book with Tor, but, you know, so it's funny, your last book, which was, I'm blanking on the title now, because
it's Black and Teeth.
Okay, so I'm going to be very honest with you. They sent me the book to have one of these conversations. The cover so freaked me out that I said, I can't do it. So Cassandra writes, among other things, horror, as is the horror-ish. Yeah. Would you say it's firmly in the horror genre, or in your, how do you think of it? In at least your latest books.
Dark fantasy.
Okay.
It depends on your predilection for certain things and your tolerance for gore. If your tolerance for gore is low, definitely horror. If it's a little bit higher, I think it sort of crosses into dark fantasy.
Oh, I like that. I like that you're adjusting the genre based upon the reader. You are the first author I've heard who's done that. So good for you. I think there's some truth in that. Okay, so but before we get, and my tolerance for gore is like so low, so it is getting lower the older I get. In fact,
oh,
so
dear.
this is how it goes. But before we get to that, if I understand correctly, your professional creative career, if we could call it that, began in game writing. Did that precede your novel, your professional novel writing, or were they happening simultaneously?
They're happening simultaneously. In fact, I am still in the games industry. My day job involves doing narrative design for various companies, from like big AAA stuff to like little indies.
Okay.
The whole spectrum.
So you still have a day job. Good for you. And you clearly, you might, I suspect you enjoy it. It's not simply there to pay the bills, or maybe that's it.
I think eventually every job becomes something you do to pay the bills with, because with regularity, the novelty wears off. There's a little bit of boredom. There's a little bit of tedium. But in terms of day jobs, it's probably one of the better ones one can have.
Right. If you're, because you're a writer, I assume you, I sense in you a person who, from when you were just a little tyke, was already scribbling in their journals, reading voraciously. Is this true, or was writing nothing you were interested in until you hit college or something.
I was a voracious reader. It came to a point where my mother was like, "You are not allowed to purchase more books. This is the end of story. You cannot have more books."
As
And
every
the
mother
thing
does say eventually.
is, I grew up in Malaysia, so like with the import taxes and exchange rates and all that, your average novel came up to like $50, $60 eventually.
Holy
And
crap.
so,
What about a
I'm also,
Kindle?
I wasn't, Kindles doesn't exist back then. I was very happy when Kindles became an invented.
The
And the problem was, I was also a speed reader. No one
Oh.
actually taught me how to read or speak English. English is my third language, in fact. And so nobody
Wow.
taught me how to read slowly. No one told me you're not supposed to read a paragraph at a time.
Wow.
And
Okay.
so, with all of that, my mother would be like, "Okay, here is a stack of 10 books that should keep you busy." And the next week, I was like, "Can we go to the bookstore again?"
Wow.
And my mother was like, "Absolutely not. Stop reading so quickly."
Wow, you were some kind of savant. You were a reading savant. And how old was, you were like 10, 12, 13 when all this was happening?
Yeah, around that age.
And
I
so,
also got incredibly obsessed with the dictionary. I think for a span of 4 or 5 years, it was my favorite book. I would just happily read through every single entry,
wow.
delighting in the words.
And do you have a very good memory?
I do actually. I did memory. It's dimmed a little bit as I've gotten older, but I still annoy everyone when I recollect conversations and arguments. They're like, "This didn't happen." I was like, "In fact, yes, it did. And you were wearing X, Y, and Z."
Wow. Okay, so you have a very alive mind, hungry mind, for
Absolutely
retain.
useless in mathematics, though.
Oh, interesting. But math, it couldn't, it didn't want to do with math. It wanted nothing
Oh,
to do
God,
with math.
absolutely not. I failed every single class. For my final year of high school, I remember distinctly cheering because I'd gotten a C minus, the only C minus I'd ever gotten
Wow.
in my life for mathematics. I failed every class every year before.
That's so funny. Okay, so you, it's just, you're on the, if it's just words, you're good. If there's words
Yes.
involved, you're good. Otherwise, you're not interested. You need that, right? And so, but were you,
Numbers make me sad.
when did you start writing your own stories?
Well, like actually writing, right? I think I was in college, in fact.
Oh, so that came later. Oh, interesting. Okay, so talk to me
Like
about that.
right after college. I originally wanted to work in forensics. I was fascinated with corpses and biology and everything. I was a very macabre little kid. And my mother told me very distinctively when it was time for college, I was like, "Could I do this?" And she was like, "No child of mine is going to play your corpses. Absolutely not." And I
Wow.
got tossed into an IT school, and she was like, "You have to choose one of these dreams, or you're not getting college education." So I went into computer engineering, and that was a really fun 3 years for various reasons, including the fact I ended up paying for some of my college fees by doing my teacher's homework for them.
Really?
It got to a point, so there was a lecturer and I, we had a scheme, so she would write the actual thesis. And I would actually do the programming bits of it. So there
Wow.
was a class I had where the teachers tried to get me to pay attention, and I was like, "I'm doing your master's homework for you. I don't care. There is
Wow.
nothing you can do to convince me to pay attention to you right now."
Wow, you are such a restless spirit. Okay, so this is interesting. So you get out of school, so you go for computers, but you, how quickly did you transition from programming into game design?
So it's a very complicated course. I did work with like neural networks for a while, and then a friend randomly was like, "Hey, do you want to do a website for me? I want to start like a games journal or something." I'm like, "You know what? Sure, why not? It's a little bit extra cash, and you're a buddy." So I did that, and then he was like, "Do you want to write an article for this?" And I'm like, "Sure." I did. Absolutely no one read it. It had 0 page views for months. And I was very offended by the whole thing. So I got it into my head that I had to go travel to America and follow the gaming circuit, in order to interact with people like editors and like other game developers, directors, what have you, in order to get attention. So I took all of my money flew to San Francisco, crashed on the couch of a friend whose photograph I had never even seen before, that which was definitely a
Wow.
choice for younger Kaz.
Yeah.
And then started following the conventions, discovered very quickly that the exchange rate meant I ran out of money in about 6 months. So I spent 6 months in New York, trying to gather money and dancing in the subways in order to afford lunch.
You like you were, instead of busking, you were dancing. You were like a dancing version of busking in the subways,
Oh,
essentially.
that there are a lot of dancing buskers, especially in New York, like being chased by cops across the subways and
Wow,
stuff
so
like that.
you
So
were
there was
doing
like,
that.
yeah. So I was doing that, and eventually made my way to Euro. And around that time, the games and tech journalism career got off the ground. I kept traveling, and somewhere in between that, I kind of did a slip into public relations for a small game publisher. And then from there, I did writing for my first game. She Remembered Caterpillars, a puzzle game about invasive brain surgery that somehow won Best Kids Game at the German Game Awards, which was one of the weirder moments of my life.
Wow,
I
okay.
distinctly remember just typing at my colleagues, like, is something missing in the translation? And I'm like, we have no idea either. We have no idea what is going on. And then around that time as well, I saw an open call from Abaddon Books going like, hey, do you want to do a novella for one of our shared worlds? And I'm like, you know what? Why not?
Okay.
And that kind of led into the novel writing and the full-time game development.
So, goodness, so you have got a lot of creative energy, clearly, and not much inhibitions, which is a great combination, at least in terms of
That's a
what you're
nice
gonna.
way of putting it.
What's that?
That's a very nice way of putting it. My cousin likes to say I have no self-preservation instinct.
Well, you're still here, you're doing all right. And so, do you like when you think of yourself, identity is always weird in terms of create like professional identity. Do you think of yourself as a fiction writer or just a creative in general that's looking for an outlet, or do you really think of yourself as a writer primarily? What's your vision of yourself? How do you describe yourself?
I usually tell people I'm a writer because that spans the whole spectrum of things that
Right.
I do. And I think I have a very pragmatic view of it, despite how prolific I am. It's still a job. I am ultimately interested in the paycheck. I would like a sustainable way to live. And
Okay.
that is often the focus. I think it's from like having really blue collar parents growing up.
Right. So you really, it is on some level way you make your living, and you understand it that way. But obviously, like you write what interests you, I assume, like certainly in terms of fiction, and you within the range of science fiction, fantasy, and horror. Is that always been your interest in reading, or was that where just your interest in writing led you?
Definitely always been my interest in reading. I bounced off literary. Mystery was fun, but I kept expecting to find a ghost or a demon and was always disappointed at the lack of it. I do love chick lit and those frothy romances, but I don't have the right temperament to write them myself.
Right. Okay. So you have a so were you a gamer as a kid? Were you into
Oh,
games?
God, yeah.
Yeah.
So much so. One of my earliest memories has been like video games and all that.
Yeah.
And I'm also like, I was born at the exact right time to grow up with the internet. So I
Yeah.
think it was 11 or 12 when the internet finally made its way to Malaysia and the world just kind of opened up. And like technologies just started growing faster and faster, and MMOs showed up. So like, a lot of my identity became melded with
Right,
that world.
with that world. And do you think that informed your fiction writing at all? When you think, when you, I mean, it's a different thing, but it's still a creative endeavor.
Only in the sense that people keep telling me like you have to settle on a brand, a kind of thing that you like to do. But I like experimenting with all of my works, all my stories, my short fiction, and mess around form and function, choice of words, tone, what have you. And I think it comes from that period of time where everything was new and everyone was just throwing everything at a wall. Like that part stuck with me.
Yeah.
But everything else, my fiction is informed by like My background in Malaysia. Malaysia is a multicultural country, and it is incredibly steeped in the cultural knowledge and the traditions of the various ethnicities that are there. So in America, in a lot of the West, they kind of compress everyone into a single identity. But growing up in Malaysia, you knew legends from Indian culture, from Malay culture, from indigenous culture, Chinese culture, all the little things and the supernatural stuff. In Malaysia and Southeast Asia, was fascinated with ghosts and demons and
Oh, really?
supernatural things.
And did you hear a lot of, were there like folk tales, just or just like a general, just a sense of it, just talked about casually in conversation? How were you aware of it?
Talked about casually in conversation. Everyone had a ghost story of their own. Malaysia, I think, had and does still have the same approach to supernatural as I think Japan does, in that everyone knows about everything. But everyone just kind of goes through life normally. There's no question about whether evolution exists. Is the
Right.
world round or flat?
Right.
Everyone knows the scientific bits. But we're also aware of all the little details in between, like the Hunger Ghost Festival with the Getais and the performances for the Getais. That was normal. Everyone
Right.
also knew about the look into the jungle at night in case someone looked down and removed the bones out of your skin.
Wow.
It was
So
just a thing
both
that was around.
realities existed,
Oh,
coexisted in your mind, the supernatural and the scientific. There was no conflict in your own mind over there.
I think, at least for me, I don't know if it's true for some of the other ethnic groups in Malaysia, but growing up, the kind of Buddhism that I know. Not understood or practiced, but like the weird melding that we had, it told us we were all going to hell regardless. It was just a question of how long our
Oh.
tenure in hell was going to be. Was it going to be like 5 days because you were a jerk at this point in your life, or was it going to be 10,000 years? And the whole process was incredibly bureaucratic. Once you were done, like with your punishment, you could just leave.
Oh, I see. So in your
So there's no fear.
I see. So in your con the Buddhism that you as you understood it was there was a hell, which I did not think there was in Buddhism, but unless I've misunderstood it. But you're going to go to hell, but it was not forever necessarily. You just go do your time, right? Go do your time, and then you get to go where?
Reincarnation or enlightenment or what have you go through, main course, you'll make you drink your thing and off you go to the next round of things.
Okay, got it.
But because of that, it was possible, I think, to just have science and magic and the supernatural coexist.
Yeah.
Because you didn't have that fear. It wasn't a thing to like stare at or question or worry about. You were just like, oh, okay. It
This is what it is.
is
This is
what it
what.
is.
Did you think that you were somebody who was like, oh, I did this and I did that and I thought this and I've got my list of things and my days in hell are getting longer and longer with every year? Or did you not add it up that way?
No, and I still don't. I don't know if I fully believe in any of this. A lot of it, I think, is cultural, but some part of me is like, I trust in that bureaucracy. Everything I've been told about it is just, it is meticulous, and it is fair.
Got
So
it.
whatever happens will happen, and I have a life to live before that.
Excellent. And so, all right. So this new book's coming out. The salt grows heavy. I believe I did it. I said it backwards. The salt grows heavy.
I do
And
like that version, though.
you like the heavy grows the salt? It's a little more. I don't know. I want to say poetic or something. But salt grows heavy. I like it. How are you feeling about it? How do you feel about your books? Because when we're talking, it's a week from the pub date. How do you feel about your books as the day of their publication approaches? What are your thoughts about them?
Always feel terrified. It's like letting out a puppy into the road and closing the door behind you.
Yeah.
The book becomes the ownership, becomes owned by the rest of the world once
That's
it's released. It changes and morphs. It's a different thing depending on who reads it. And it's scary and it's interesting to see how people interpret it, but also a little bit terrifying each time.
Yeah, well, you know, it's so interesting. You are I that you are speaking my language, but you're the first author who, when I've talked to about this, has led with the book now belonging to the reader, which I 100% agree with. You know, it's like it's yours until out it goes, and it must belong to them. But so you have to get comfortable with that giving up ownership of this thing that you spent a year or two sculpting and loving
think
and
it's because, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but I think it's because of my work in game development. Writing books is an incredibly solitary affair, although
yeah.
that itself isn't virtue. You have editors, copy editors, et cetera, but
Right.
look, we'll move that aside. But with games, especially if you're talking about working in like AAA, where you have teams of up to like 2,000 to 3,000 people, you have to understand whatever you do belongs to the project and the collective. You are feeding into this machine, into this
Right.
creature, and you are trying to support all of these other components, the visuals, the audio, the art, the programming, the design. And having that be like 8 hours of my day every day, it teaches me to just kind of release my work and just hand it over.
Oh, it's good. It's your ego, you're sort of forced to not have a tremendous egoic identification with every word you put down. It doesn't really belong to you, which I think is so helpful, don't you? I mean, because otherwise you sit there protecting, because I imagine your readers, the world of readers has gotten more and more vocal as Goodreads and Amazon, et cetera, and so you hear from them, and probably most of them love it. But occasionally, one of these infidels will not like your work, and so maybe that's helped you a little with when people don't like what you've done.
Yes, although I still
Little.
occasionally look askance at the ones who email me and go like, "You need to put down the thesaurus and stop showing off your SAT skills." And I'm like, one, I wasn't raised in America. Two, there was a thesaurus involved. My brain is stuff like that. How dare you? I just spent like a lot of years reading the dictionary. So yes, I'm a nerd, but in a very different way.
That's right. You don't need this. They don't understand how packed your mind is with the English language. And if it's there, you're going to use it.
And I love the language as well. I think it's because I came to it not late in life, but later than a lot of people would in like the West. And I'm fascinated with how the language has magpied from so many other languages, so many other cultures, because of terrible reasons, admittedly.
Right.
But pulled from so much, and there's so many different conventions in English. It's such a wonky, wobbly little language where you can't turn nouns
It
into verbs and verbs into nouns and
is.
descriptions. And it's so beautiful in that
Oh.
sense. I love the chaos of it, the entropy of it. And so it's something I like playing with, the way some people play with Lego bricks.
Yeah, you do what you like. You use all those words. And if those people don't like it, go read somebody else. You know, it's really because there's going to be so many readers who are going to appreciate the way you use language, not just because they probably savor it, but because they like to learn some stuff too. Occasionally see a word. You must occasionally in your readings, you might encounter one you don't aren't already familiar with. I'll bet it doesn't happen often, but it
It
must.
doesn't happen often.
No, I don't think it would. I don't think it would. But every once in a while it must. And I would think, I don't know, does it please you that you get to go look it up or to discover what it
It's
means? Are you a vision?
utter giddy pleasure every single time. Robert McFarlane's Landmarks is one of my favorite books of all times for that reason. Essentially, this one writer went through different landscapes, in case you're not familiar with the book. And basically looked up at all the place words that used to exist there and just talked about it and how people are collected and how people make use of it, which have vanished from use. And one of my favorite words that I discovered was wolf-like, that
Wait a minute,
soft
what is the word?
wolf-like,
Wolf-like?
light.
Light, wolf-light.
That last little bit of light as sunset falls
Oh.
away because it's like the color of a wolf's eye and the darkness I found, and now it doesn't. Well,
That's a great word. Oh, we got to revive it. Bring it back. Bring it back.
the book also posits something that is incredibly interesting to me and something that stuck to me, even though parts of me sometimes goes, maybe I should make my language leaner, although I do that for my data. Anyway, he talked about how streamlining language and removing this place words, this very specific words, has kind of disenchanted us. We have lost our fascination with the natural world. We've lost our fascination with small, minute details because everything is flattened. When a mountain is just a mountain, we don't think about all the details and all the life and all things associated with it. And yeah, just
That
words
you're
and
not gonna, don't let it
practices.
happen. You let yourself, you know, you lead by example. You remain enchanted by life and words, and others will follow. You know why I think they'll follow? Because it feels good to be enchanted. And here's one of my foundational beliefs about human beings. Despite all our complaining and all our gripes and all our cruelty, sometimes we like to feel good and we don't like to feel bad. And so if you can lead by example and be enchanting, people will follow you because it feels good to be enchanted. Magic feels good. You with me? Are you with me?
It does. There are a lot of writers out there on social media who embody this. Carlos Hernandez and C.S. Cooney, if you go through their Instagrams, their social, even their writing, the sheer amount of joy and verve in life that they contain, it's things that I aspire towards.
You can
And
do it.
yeah. And
You
I do
could.
like the trend in TikTok randomly. I think a lot of Gen Zers talk about romanticizing their life, framing little videos, moving things around, so it's a more beautiful example of the real world. And I just fucking love that so much.
That's good. Yeah, absolutely. I think you need to. I'm all for framing every experience in the best way possible to understand it, whether it's your own life or experience you've had. Hey, life is a story we're telling, right? We're telling this story. And most of my suffering, Cassandra, has been when I've told very bad stories about myself or my life or people I know. Tell them on purpose. Okay. The salt grows heavy. The salt grows heavy. It's out there. It's awesome. It's beautiful. You're going to love it. If you're into this stuff, you're into this stuff. But I'm not done with you yet, Cassandra. I know you have so much publicity to do and so much work to do and so many games to write, but I'm not quite done with you because I want you to finish this sentence. Oh, you've done a lot of writing. You've done a lot of writing. Busy, busy, busy person. But think about all the writing you've done. And if it's taught you anything, it's taught you what? About just life or yourself.
Let me think about that one for a second. It has definitely taught me that every creative eventually sees their world and their life in metaphor, and that writing is tremendous as a way of understanding both oneself and the world around them.
I
And if you look at the bo sorry, let me finish that. If you look at any writer's body of work, you can see genuinely the things that fascinated them, frightened them, or tormented them. And if you follow the body of work across the years, you can sometimes see the resolution of it. The last books of every writer's life are inevitably some of the most poignant things you will ever read.
That is a fantastic answer. That is a fantastic answer. And the first time I've heard that, having in this specific way, having asked it probably 1500 times. So
Wow.
good for you. I like it. I like it. And I love the little optimism you give us there at the end that people's last books are the most poignant. I think you might be right. I think you might be right. Cassandra Kaw, you are a delight. Congratulations on the book and best of luck with it and all the terrifying stuff you're going to write to follow.
Thank you so much, Beth.
Yeah, it's a metaphor. It's just a metaphor. Everything we create is a metaphor for life and what we care about. It's true. It's true. Listen, I want to thank my producer, RJ Jeffries. Thank you, my friend. I want to thank all of you out there for listening in. And, you know, until the next time we chat, I want you to go find something you love to do and do it.